Hi, I'm Dr. Pam Peek, and welcome to episode 51 of Her, the podcast all about women, where we share the naked truth about her mind, her body, and her life. Oh no, what are we talking about today? We're talking about the unmade bed, changing gender roles, a man's perspective. Oh boy, can't wait to dive into this one. But before we do, I want to make sure that you know that this episode of Her is made possible by our friends at Smarty Pants Women's Complete Vitamins. They're delicious once-a-day gummies that contain the complete vitamin, mineral, folate, and omega mix customized for women. Trust me, you won't forget to take them because they taste so great. To learn more, please run on over to SmartyPantsVitamins.com. And just a quick reminder, please hop on over to iTunes after our episode and rate and review us. Man, do I love to read those things, and I really do. All right, it's time for Her.
Her, the podcast.
The naked truth about women.
Her mind.
Her body.
Her life. It's all about Her.
When I read about this next topic, which is all about men's ever-changing gender roles, I just loved it. And the book is a killer, and it's called The Unmade Bed. It's written by Stephen Marsh, who we have the utter pleasure of having on for this segment. He's a novelist and culture writer, and for the past 5 years, he's written a monthly column for Esquire magazine, 1,000 words about our culture, as well as regular features and opinion pieces for The Atlantic, The New York Times, The Wall Street Journal, The New Republic, and all over the place. His books include 3 novels, Hunger of the Wolf, Raymond and Hannah, and Shining at the Bottom of the Sea, as well as, well, The Unmade Bed. So I really want to embrace this entire topic by hopping right into it. Stephen, welcome to the Her Podcast.
Hi, pleasure to be here.
Okay, so Kirkus writes, the status of men at work and at home is definitely in flux. And you, Stephen Marsh, effectively pinpoint the most prominent areas, most of which are familiar to women who've been struggling to assert themselves for decades. Throughout this wonderful book, The Unmade Bed, you, Stephen, include footnote comments by, well, your wife, which adds a lighter air to the narrative, and I really enjoy them. The definitions of masculinity and manliness are changing, and your commentaries are going to help all of us understand how. So, why'd you write the book?
Well, I felt like on this huge subject of the change in men, there was really this absence, which is men weren't talking about it. I mean, you know, even touring this book, like, I'm talking overwhelmingly to women like yourself and like, you know, other people who, because they are the ones who talk about gender and who've had 70 years of talking about gender. And men are really just now beginning to think about gender as a kind of performance, as a kind of, as kind of something that isn't just innate to them. And they're, you know, men are really confused. And I think when you look at politics, you can see that the consequences of that can be horrific as well as liberating.
So are you mansplaining to me right now?
Well, you know, it's funny because, like, I feel like men talk too much about every single subject except this one, right? I mean, like, this is the one subject
right.
where, like, which is about themselves, which is about, like, the nature of their own gender and the nature of their own and the way that manliness and masculinity are constructed, right? Like, you know, it just is the one place where men really don't talk much about it and don't think much about it. And I think when you look at something like Donald Trump and his performance of masculinity, you can see that that unexamined masculinity eventually just becomes toxic masculinity. And we're in a very, very difficult place right now for negotiated gender roles with men, and men are just doing an absolutely terrible job of working themselves into the future. And that's why I think, you know, even though there is kind of, you know, some people are like, you know, this really is like, you shouldn't talk about this, you're a man. But I think it's actually men who do need to talk about it. because like we're failing.
Well, yeah, I mean, you can't trust us. I mean, I've got a pair of ovaries and you don't. And, you know, I'm going to look at things one particular way. And, you know, we've seen a million times with Tannenbaum's books and the rest of them that men and women have, like, there's woman speak and man speak. I mean, you know, good luck trying to translate back and forth. So, you know, I think that one point that you made, there's nothing less manly than talking about manliness. Right. I just find that fascinating. And it's almost like it's beaten out of you, you know, since childhood. Yeah. I mean, isn't that true?
Well, yeah. And I mean, like, I think it's, you know, the silence is actually this manly virtue, right? And of course, it's, you know, if you're, that's fine and good, I guess, if you're a patriarch or you're some kind of warrior 200 years ago. But, like, we're entering a world where, you know, women are 40% of breadwinners, you know, and it's, those trends are, you know, those trends are irreversible. Like, everyone's worried about Trump and women's fate. Like, you have to remember, during the Reagan-Bush years, which were, like, the worst, you know, the years of what Susan Faludi called the backlash, like the pay gap went from 66 cents to 78 cents, right? Like it is to 74 cents, excuse me. Like it was a year, like the economic trends that are at play here are irreversible. And the cultural stuff that we're trying to deal with, where we're trying to negotiate through this, like men have no way to negotiate this new reality, which is that women are going to make as much money as they do. If, you know, eventually, and like, and that their roles as, you know, as their gender role as straight provider, is going to be defeated. And like, that's why I think we really need to have this conversation immediately. And I think, and you know, the Trump years are the perfect years to do it because we have this, you know, hyper masculine performance artist, on display all the time.
Well, you know, okay, now let's take it back a little bit. Let's look at modern parenthood. Yeah, oh no, this is like, you know, there's so much talk about it. I mean, like 3 hours later, we're still at it, right? So let's look at modern parenthood and the new fatherhood. How has this changed? You know, you said that men themselves can't have it all for the same reasons women can't have it all, right? And so now we're talking about, How do you now raise a son, right, in this brand new era, this new normal? Where is this leading us?
Well, I mean, I think there is one, that is the one redeeming feature of contemporary masculinity, is that men are embracing their new caregiver fatherhood roles pretty intensely and pretty naturally. You know, my mother, who's a physician, like she told me that the biggest change that she saw in gender in her lifetime wasn't the pill, it was Lamaze. And because Lamaze meant that meant that fathers were with women when they gave birth. And then from that comes all kinds of consequences, right? Comes all kinds of, like, then you're more involved in nurturing, as a father, you're much more involved in nurturing your children. You're part of this activity of taking care of the flesh of newborn children. And then the consequences of that are enormous. And I think, you know, that is one thing that's happening. That is, you know, one of the really encouraging trends here. And, you know, I think ultimately, like, going, when you go through the numbers about what's happening, there is a lot to be hopeful about. There really is. And fatherhood, the new fatherhood, I think is really one of those examples. I mean, you know, men are going to have to be more caregiving because women are going to be making more money. Like it's not that, that is, those are just facts, right? Like there's nothing that can, no one can change that in any way by thinking or writing or doing anything in politics or anything. Like that is just the economic trend that has been underway for 110 years without cease. And so we're playing catch up at the end of it. And I think that one aspect I actually do think is really hopeful.
Excellent, and more excellent. Okay, so we've got also this whole thing about, and I really, again, go back to the issue of how sons and young males are raised, when we now look at what we now call the crisis of male friendship, it's sort of like right. the bros and the crisis of male friendship. In pop culture, male friendship is a retreat into thoughtlessness and crudity. To mature as a female person is to mature into female friendships. To mature as a male person is to mature out of male friends. What the heck is going on here?
And it has horrible consequences. I mean, it has the most severe consequences. Like when you get to like the male and female suicide rates divert at exactly at the point where men start losing their friendship. Right? Like they lose their friendships, they start around 12 years old. And as they grow out of these friendships, their suicide rate is, by 12, by 15, it's 4-1. And then by 20, it's 5-1. And then when you get to later in life, you have all these men who are like atomic. They're like just absolutely without friendship. And because of this strong, silent fantasy of masculinity, and of course, like men are absolutely every bit as social as women. They need, like, this is just a species trait that you need friendships, and without them they get crushed, and that is really something that is an imposition of these old patriarchal norms coming to haunt men and destroy them. And it's so, like, when you look through the research, it's so obvious. You don't have to wonder what is going on here. It just, like, when you look at it, it's like, oh yes, men lose friendships and then they die. And when you get to middle age, when you get to like 45 and you start really looking, I mean, there is an epidemic of suicide in the United States for middle-aged white men, right? Like it recently outpaced, traffic death is the number one cause of death, right? For 40 to 55-year-old men. So
exactly.
Like, it's not nothing. Like, it's not like, oh, they're feeling bad. It's like this actually has real social consequences that you can trace in the world. And that's why, like, there really aren't like a ton of men who think about this stuff. Like, I mean, feminism has this grand intellectual tradition of 70 years of like literally thousands of brilliant people working on it. We basically have Michael Kim, right? Who like started the masculinity studies department last year, like the first graduate program last year. Right. I think it's not good. And, also this hurts women, right? Cause they have to live with these men who have all these unresolved gender crises that come
well,
out
that's
in the
why
worst possible
you,
way.
You brought this up beautifully in the book. And it's, you also brought up at the same time, we're talking about this, as a physician, one of the things that breaks my heart is when I see guys and men as they age, certainly within that age period that you noted about suicidality, I notice them just being alone. They're just alone. They don't have anyone to hang with. It's nobody there.
I asked my mother, what's the number one thing that's changed over the course of your medical career, like when she retired a few years ago? And she said loneliness. I mean, she said there's this immense upspike in loneliness.
Well, there's an epidemic of isolation is actually what it is. And social scientists have really studied this closely. And there was a really nice play recently in the New York Times looking at a couple of more recent studies. I mean, the morbidity and mortality rate associated with isolationism, where you just don't really have connection with other human beings or just terrible connection. You may be living with someone, but it may not be working anyway, one way or the other, is equal to or greater than that of much of the cardiovascular disease that we see, for instance. It's crazy.
Oh, yeah.
It's through the ceiling. And I'll tell you what, I think that's just the tip of the iceberg. Do you really honestly think we're capturing everything that's happening out there? Not.
Of course not.
I think it's just, a small semblance of this. You also wrote something here that just really, hit home. You mentioned feminism. You said the world doesn't need male feminists. it needs decent guys. What's that
mean? Yeah. Yeah. I mean, I'm reconsidering that after the election of Trump, to be perfectly frank. I mean, you know, I don't know. Like, I mean, you know, I really believe that, you know, that, I mean, that came out of my own experiences of going to college and seeing a lot of guys rally around, call themselves feminists, and then end up being, like, absolute jerks, right? And that just, that was just anecdotal. But I'm just saying, you know, I think on the other hand, like, we're, you know, when I wrote this book was, like, 3 months ago, we're in a situation where very basic questions of feminism that I thought were answered forever and ever, amen, have returned to the fore, like basic questions of women's health being, you know, banned by the U.S. government, and deeply misogynistic alternative cultures actually having a say in the United States government. I would stand by that. I think the problem with calling yourself a feminist is that, is it really? Does it need to be said in the year 2017 that women are fully people? You know, like, I don't know anyone who doesn't believe that, who doesn't believe in the equality of women. But on the other hand, when you look around, when you look at Russia passing laws where it's okay to beat your wife, I would hope that any decent man who saw that would understand that that is a, you know, crime against women and needs to be opposed with every political force that we can measure, like every political, you know, thing that we can gather, we should use to oppose that. So I think Trump has really complicated that particular question for me.
Interesting. So you also in the book mentioned one other thing that I thought was interesting: internet pornography, right?
Yeah.
So it's interesting. Historically and intellectually, pornography coincides with the empowerment of women.
And it's really interesting,
explain.
Actually. I mean,
explain
that was probably
that
the most
one.
Controversial part of the book, but, like, the research on that is really, it's really very complicated. But when you look into it, like, you know, like, there's, pornography is illegal in Saudi Arabia, right? Pornography is illegal in Iran. It is illegal in countries where there is basically chattel marriage, right? Where right. Pornography historically has exploded was Sweden in the 1950s, Germany in the 1970s, America in the 1980s, countries that, and France, incidentally, in the 18th century, which is really the source of, you know, which was considered the golden age of women, in salons and women with, you know, unprecedented levels of political power and influence and intellectual influence. And that's where you get, that's really the origin of hardcore pornography is right there. And then I just think our attitude towards pornography is just incredibly crude. And really it's sort of like, this is bad and it is doing something bad in the world. When in fact, it's actually much more nuanced and complicated when you look at the research into what it actually does.
Interesting. Very, very interesting. You know, again, looking at these parallels with male and female and the research that backs it up really helps educate us and enlighten us about the fact that, this is complicated, you know, as they say in the business. But also, I really, you know, one of the things I got out of your book, The Unmade Bed, is a better appreciation of trends. Where are we going with all of this? You know, go to that place. Tell me where do you think we're going?
Well, I just think, you know, the one thing that I would say that I got from researching this book that I don't think is commonly talked about. Like, I think in the day-to-day fight for justice and equality and the day-to-day, like, and the day-to-day internet outrage machinery, we tend to just get depressed and despair. But when you look at the numbers, like, men and women are going towards equality. Really, they are. And you know, it may seem slow, but it's actually, you know, like, the trends that are on display are really hopeful. Like, violence against women of all kinds has been in decline for 50 years. even things like, and you know, it's not unreporting things. It's things even like boyfriends stealing from their girlfriends, things like that. Like these trends have been underway for a long time. Women, the closing of the pay gap, the female labor participation rate in OECD countries. Like, you know, the countries that are rich, the countries that succeed are countries that use women the most. That is just, and everyone knows it. Like everyone who is in power in, even in Saudi Arabia, like they know like that the cost of excluding women from the public sector, from public life, is enormous. It's just vast. And you know, and because of that, like the movement that we see is economic, and those trends are totally irreversible. I really believe that. I mean, they, in the sense that they've been underway for 100 years, and they just keep, they go one way, they go exactly one way. And you know, so all these like terrible cultural things that happen to us in our daily lives, like, you know, what we see, it's the Trump era, so it's like what happened in the past hour, right? I mean, like, you know, something horrific probably happened in the past while we've been talking that we haven't checked. Like, I just don't think that should dissuade us from understanding that the problems that we face are very much the right kinds of problems to have, and that we are going towards a place where people are going to love each other more as people than for these traditional gender norms. And it's very exciting.
I love it. You know, so what I want to make sure everyone out there knows is that, yeah, there is hope. Number one, and you heard it from the expert. And number two, there are trends afoot. There are new cultural shifts and transitions going on right now. And I think that there's, in the process of all of this, there's a redefining and reframing of our roles as men and women in this society at multiple levels,
every level.
Personally and professionally. Wouldn't you agree?
Every level. I totally agree.
Okay, and that what we really need here is the ability to take a deep breath, crying out loud, and guys, seriously, you know, start talking a little bit.
Yeah.
You know, you don't need to do that.
The problem here is men. Like the problem here.
Yeah.
Is men.
I mean, you know, guys. You read in the New York talk? Times.
Yeah. You read in the New York Times like men will not work as nurses. Like Uber just delivered. Through its auto service, just delivered a truckload of beer in Colorado, right? So that's the end of the trucking industry. It's coming to an end. So that's the number one employer of men in the United States. And that is going to be done. Like, that's coming to an end. And, like, the choice is to sit around and play video games and watch pornography in your basement or to get a real job as a nurse. And, like, men turning down nurse jobs has got to end. Like that is just men will perish if they don't, you know, and they need, and the only reason they're turning down those jobs is these completely ridiculous, antiquated gender stereotypes that somehow have held on like zombie ideas into a world where they just simply no longer apply. And I think it's
right.
It's because of the
I
violence.
Completely, absolutely agree. And I think that, you know, as we close this up, I think that what would be really great, why don't you just do another damn book here and just tell men how in the heck to talk, you know, how to be able to start communicating. Really, I'm not kidding. You're a guy. You tell them. Because I think it's silly for anyone else to really bring this out. I don't care how smart they think they are. I think guys need to talk about guys talking. need to talk about guys talking. I like that. I'm not kidding. Because, you know, maybe that's the title of the book. That's the one right there. Okay, you could just quote me on that sucker. But seriously, I can't teach him. I can only, you know, woman-splain it. I can't mansplain it.
Well, you know, the interesting thing was, like, when I was writing this book, like, you know, one of the things about this book is that my wife gives commentary all the way through, because as she was editing the book, she we just leave these great notes. And we were like, I was like, you know, I can't really put that in myself, but you know, we can't really keep it out. So the book is like my book, but then with her thoughts sort of sprinkled through. And she says, you're lying here, Stephen. And you know, this is not actually how this is not actually how things worked when we were living in New York and so on. And I really feel like the interesting stuff in gender now is the stuff that's between genders, right? That's actually only achievable by talking about like men and women together rather than women or men alone. You know, like these seems to me like the crux of the problem that we're getting to.
Right. And I also think that, you know, men suffer terribly when they're isolated, and this isolationism that takes place, right, is something that is a result of so much of this silence and this expectation that silence is equal to strength, because it's not. It's just simply not. All right. So everyone out there, I want you to just run out and grab this book. It was written beautifully by an expert writer, but also by a guy who really gets it. And the name of the book is The Unmade Bed. The author is Stephen Marsh. And you could go to his website, and I'll spell it. It's S-T-E-P-H-E-N, M as in Mary, A-R-C-H-E.com. So that's StephenMarsh.com to learn more about his wonderful work, and also to pick up a copy of the book, because I'm not kidding. Grab the book, sit down, and then talk to someone. Oh my gosh, have a man talk to you about it. Now, isn't that a radical idea? So I want to thank Stephen for being on with us for the Herb podcast on changing gender roles, a man's perspective. Stephen, thank you so much for being on the Herb podcast.
Total pleasure.
All right. So remember to catch every episode of Her. Just hit subscribe on iTunes or on our show page at RadioMD.com. And please take, 30 seconds and rate this podcast and leave us a review, because we read them and we love to read them. So please leave us a review. I'm Dr. Pam Peek. Follow me on Twitter at PamPeekMD, and you can also check out our Her Show page at RadioMD.com for all of our past episodes. Thanks for listening, and stay well.